Thank you, Don. I also would like to extend a thank you out to the organizing committee for the invite here and give me the opportunity to share some information regarding supplementing fat to the cow herd. It's no surprise to anybody in this room when I would suggest that the range beef cow operator is going to continue to face the challenge of maintaining sustainable livestock production systems. Now, what can we do from an animal science perspective? Basically, the way we are approaching that at the University of Wyoming is to work on things that we can do to increase biological efficiency. The level of biological efficiency that we have deemed to be important is the ability to maintain the sellable product every year, namely the calf, this fibrous cow. And because the ability of the animal to reproduce that calf is going to affect the profit of the herd, our focus has been on both the level of the cow and then the level of the calf in terms of how we might use nutrition to impact the survivability of the calf or the sellable product. Just take a quick look at some animal factors that affect profitability. In some work that was summarized by Bellows last year, at least published last year, based on national data, what they had indicated was that the animal factors that influence profitability of the cow herd are mainly related, at least 75%, with the ability to reproduce and maintain a calf that survives the early neonatal period. And in fact, what they demonstrated from those figures was that the beef industry loses anywhere from $441 million to $500 million annually due to the inability to reproduce a calf. Taking a closer look at their data, and the reason that I bring this up is this is basically a solidification for the levels at which we're interested in supplementing fat. Basically, what these guys did was took the literature information and distributed exactly how the beef industry was losing money in terms of the inability to produce a calf on an annual basis. Roughly 50%, if you look at the red part of that graph, could be attributed to the inability of the cow to rebreed in a defined breeding season. So that's what infertility would mean in this particular case. Not necessarily disease situations, but just that cow did not rebreed. In terms of dystocia, that represents about another 36% of the total loss. And in this particular case, dystocia is represented here, but realize that essentially what they were talking about was the inability of that calf to survive the early neonatal period. And the reason that they put it in terms of dystocia was because the dystocia is highly correlated with the ability of the calf to survive that early neonatal period. So let's break down the annual cow cycle, and in so doing, I want to describe why we are focusing on the certain areas that we are in terms of fat research or fat supplementation research. In the red and yellow area of the graph, I've termed this the critical 100 days. That's not a term new. I've stolen that from some of the very old literature on the annual beef cow cycle. But this is the area that we're going to be discussing today, that last part of gestation and then that early part of lactation, for two reasons. In the case of the late gestational period, that period is a period of time that, if the cow is not managed properly, could influence her ability to rebreed, and also it could influence the survivability of the calf. In that second period, the 60-day period, obviously what we're talking about there is a period in time where the offspring, we would hope, would survive. And the ability of that offspring to survive is going to be determined based on how we manage the cow. But then also, what we're going to try to attempt to do is have that cow breed within that window of 80 days after she calves in order to produce a calf once more and maintain that annual cycle of producing a calf. Okay, so in terms of supplementing fat to the cow herd, I'm going to concentrate on that critical 100 days. That is the postpartum period, that 60-day window or up through the breeding season. In terms of the prepartum period, I'm going to mix these up as I go through the talk today, primarily because I'm going to illustrate these in terms of the responses that have been observed. But in terms of the prepartum period, what I'm talking about here is mainly that late gestational period, and more specifically, most of the research that's been conducted in this area is targeting the last 60 days of pregnancy, or roughly about the last 60 days. And then we're going to finish up with a discussion on how supplementing fat to that cow during late gestation affects that calf and the possibility of either increasing the survivability of that calf or, decrease in survivability. But for purposes primarily of myself, I needed to include this particular slide because I am a nutritionist and I'm going to be talking about reproduction today. And so just by way of review for myself, I put this diagram up to illustrate what occurs at the ovary when that cow is cycling, because there's a lot of responses, and Rick had talked about these earlier, that have been noted in terms of how fat affects the ovary, and the ovary is responsible, as I'll describe in a second, for a lot of things that ultimately affect the ability to produce a calf on the annual basis. So if we start up here at kind of the upper left-hand part of this graph, we have smaller follicles that will eventually develop, and as Rick had mentioned, develop into larger follicles somewhere around the 12 millimeter diameter. Eventually, that follicle will be the dominant follicle where once it ruptures, it will release the ovum, and hopefully if the cow has had semen deposited, either AI or from the bull, that particular embryo or that particular egg will develop into an embryo. Then the tissue that was developing this egg will change form and function. It becomes then the corpus luteum, and this corpus luteum is responsible for maintenance of early pregnancy. Now, I bring this up because the corpus luteum actually secretes the hormone that is responsible for maintaining pregnancy, and that is progesterone. And some of the responses that I'm going to be talking about in a little bit have to do with how the fat affects this whole cycle that is present on the screen right now. Okay, so some positive responses, they're very similar to what Rick had just talked to us about. If we look at some of the early work that was published, or early to me, probably not early in terms of science, but some of the work that was coming out in the 80s and 90s, there was pretty good evidence to suggest that supplementing fat was going to enhance follicular development. That's something that Rick had just got done describing for some of the studies that he's been conducting as well. The idea here is that, and the idea that was put forth, was that if you increase follicular development, that's going to result in more animals that are going to be cycling. Okay? And then, consistent with that idea, the researchers were also noting that some of the cells that eventually develop into the corpus luteum were increasing their growth and development in animals fed fat. So the bottom line, if you were just to take the reproductive events leading to, or all of the ovarian events leading to reproduction together, these data could be interpreted to suggest that we were going to see a positive response to supplementing fat, positive response in terms of reproduction. Now, there's been limited reports in the literature on factors that truly affect the ability to maintain a calf annually. And when there are reports in the literature that are available, they're usually based on very small numbers. And so what I did for the purposes of today's talk is pulled all the data that I could find in the published literature, mainly in the Journal of Animal Science, Professional Animal Scientists, and then added the University of Wyoming data because that was data that I had readily available. The first item of business, just let me explain how most of my graphs are going to be set up. I'm going to have the response of interest indicated on the y-axis. The response that we're going to be discussing is indicated in the title, and then on the x-axis, I'm going to have the different treatments. Okay, so what the data represent in the present slide is the interval between calving and the time that the animal exhibited first estrus, postpartum interval. On the left-hand side, what we have is the control in the yellow, and in the middle is the red. This would be postpartum fat feeding. Okay, this would be that period of time up through the rebeating period, sometime after calving, most of the time within a few days after the cow's mother up. As you can see from this graph, there really wasn't an effect on postpartum interval when we feed fat postpartum. And then on the very right-hand side, in the blue graph, what we have is representation of what will occur with postpartum interval when we feed fat that late gestational period, again, around 56 to 60 days before the cow is going to calve. Once more, we don't see an effect on postpartum interval. Now, I'm going to exercise a little caution in interpreting this particular piece of data because this only represents one study, and this happened to be a study that was conducted at the University of Wyoming. Nothing against us, but there is a limited data set to draw on, so we can't really make a lot of definitive conclusions regarding prepartum fat supplementation on postpartum interval. When I take a look at the published literature on detection of estrus, I also find that there's limited reports when discussing prepartum fat supplementation. So the majority of the data presented in this slide represent data that were collected and pulled together from the University of Wyoming studies. Needless to say, in the 129 versus the 212 cow comparison, we did not see a difference in the percentage of animals that were detected in estrus the subsequent breeding season after we fed fat during late gestation. And just a point of a note to make relative to prepartum fat supplementation. When I discuss prepartum fat supplementation, I'm talking about the supplementation program ceasing at calving. Okay, so the program would stop at the time that the cow calved. In terms of postpartum supplementation, we see essentially the same effect. Notice our cow numbers are quite limited, and that's primarily because this is not something that is reported extensively in the literature. But nonetheless, if we pull all the literature data together and put that into one summary, we observe that detection of estrus response is not affected by feeding fat during that early postpartum period. Okay, the first service conception rate is certainly going to affect their ability to maintain the calf in that annual cycle, where what we'd hope to do is have a calf every 365 days. The ability to breed within that first service is certainly going to impact that of the sustainability of maintaining that calf annually. So what I did was I also looked at how fat supplementation affects the first service conception rate. Once more, we have prepartum fat supplementation on the right-hand side and compared to the control on the left-hand side. And once more, this represents primarily University of Wyoming data. Once more, first service conception rate from our data would indicate that prepartum fat supplementation has no effect. Taking a look at postpartum fat supplementation, once more, this is from the time of calving during that early lactation period, what we see is kind of an opposite numerical response. Now, we didn't have enough numbers to pick this up statistically, but I would be willing to guess, I'd take a venture to guess that a 7-unit reduction in first service conception rate would be significant for the majority of the producers in the room, and especially those that are dealing with 1,000 or more head cattle operations. And so what I did is I tried to explain why we see this numerical reduction in first service conception rate when we feed fat postpartum. Basically what I did to determine this was I removed the University of Wyoming data from the total data set, and voila, I observed a similar response to what I just got done talking about as far as prepartum fat supplementation. No effect of feeding fat during the postpartum period. There is one report that is in the literature where they did see a trend for an increase in first service conception rate when they feed fat during that postpartum period. A couple of things to note about this is, in this case, they used fat from fish meal. And so when you calculate out the total amount of fat that they were adding to the diet, it was only 56 grams per day. This is going to be an important point, as I'm going to bring this up once again a little bit later. So 56 grams a day, and the fat source would have come from fish sources, okay, fish fatty acids. Now, taking a look at the University of Wyoming data, here's the culprit. The reason that we saw that decrease or apparent decrease in first service conception rates could be explained by the data that we've collected at the University of Wyoming, where animals fed the fat postpartum exhibited a decrease in first service conception rate. Now, I always hesitate to show these data because these are terrible first service conception rates. And it isn't that we don't know what we're doing at the University of Wyoming. Basically, it has to do with the design of the study. In the data set that I just showed, it was a summation of three separate studies that were conducted, very similar over a 3-year period. And two of those particular experiments had the following design. And the reason that we see that low first service conception rate, as noted in the previous slide, can be attributed to the design of those 2-year studies, where we had animals that calved were actually managed to calve in body condition score 4 or 6. And then in those animals, we superimposed 3 different treatments. Our treatments included a control, a high linoleate fat source, which was safflower seeds that were cracked, and then a cracked high oleate safflower seed. A couple points of interest here would be that, first of all, there was not a dietary fat by body condition score interaction, suggesting then that it doesn't matter what condition the cows are in, they respond to fat similarly, and that would be true if you look through some of the literature on that subject. Cows in 4, body condition score of 4, respond similar to cows in body condition score of 8, and that's been documented. One of the things to point out here might be that in the case of what we fed for fat, we were 7.5 times greater than that other study that I demonstrated where there was a potential for a positive response. And the level that we're talking about in our studies is anywhere from 2 to 7.5% greater than other studies. But we believe that there may be something more to it than just level of fat. And I hesitate to suggest, because there's limited reports on the information, that it is truly the level of fat where we exceeded the level necessary to see a positive response. What I'm going to submit to you is that the response could be attributed to the supply of linoleic acid. In a flow study, in a digestion study where we were interested in determining how much linoleic acid was actually available for absorption by the animal, what we determined in those diets that we that I just talked about, what we determined was that when we feed high linoleate safflower seeds, we increase the linoleic acid supply by 2.5 times compared to the other treatments. Okay, the importance of this is not necessarily to understand all this biochemistry, but the bottom line is that linoleic acid is an initial precursor to prostaglandin, prostaglandin F2 alpha. It's the same compound that is used in luteolyse to knock out the CL in part of that estrous synchronization program. And one additional thing to note on this particular slide is that this prostaglandin when it's metabolized, is released back into the blood circulation as a metabolite that we can measure. And so what we did was we looked at the levels of prostaglandin metabolite to give us an index of the prostaglandin that was being produced when we fed the different fat sources. And lo and behold, what we notice is that in the case of feeding the high linoleate feed or the high linoleate supplements, there was an increase in prostaglandin synthesis. So we believe at this point that maybe the decrease in first service conception rate that we noticed in the fat supplemented groups in our studies could be attributed to the fact that we have this source of prostaglandin there that is inhibiting full functionality of the corpus luteum and decreasing the ability of those animals to maintain early pregnancy. Nevertheless, if we look at overall pregnancy rate, we do eventually get all those animals bred. All the comparisons would indicate that overall pregnancy rate is similar between animals fed no fat or fat that is supplemented into the diet. In the case of feeding fat prepartum now, it's a little different story. These data would represent three experiments at the University of Wyoming and two experiments that were published in Professional Animal Scientists out of Fort Keogh. What we do notice is that feeding fat during the late gestation period increases overall pregnancy rate. To partially explain this, maybe in this case, the high linoleate is actually working to our advantage. In a study that we published, what we demonstrated was that plasma linoleic acid content, in other words, the status of linoleic acid, increased from the time that we started feeding fat, this would be 56 days prepartum, all the way up until calving when we stopped feeding fat. Now, the reason I bring this up is the high linoleic acid content in this case may actually be helping us by increasing prostaglandin at calving, which would maybe help with increase or decrease in the time that it takes to involute the uterus. In other words, the cow repairs sooner and might be able to cycle or might be able to breed up eventually a little better. Now, that is not always the case, however. If we pull out a subset of data from the University of Wyoming herd and compare how the animals bred up when they were fed fat prepartum, we notice the overall pregnancy rates are 97%. One of the reasons I put this in here, too, was because I wanted to assure you that we don't accept 50% conception rates as normal at the University of Wyoming. These are data that we collected just this last year where we fed a diet that's similar to what Dr. Paisley is going to be talking to you about after the break. These cows were fed a limit fed, about a 60% grain diet, a high concentrate diet. And so the point of this is that animals that are fed or managed with a high plane of nutrition probably are not going to respond to the fat. Okay, and that is a suggestion that is being made over and over again. Okay, so we've gone through the things that might affect the cow in terms of reproduction. So the next question is, can we influence the ability of that calf to survive during that early neonatal period? Birth weights are highly correlated with the incidence of dystocia. And so what I did is I took the information from the literature, pulled all the means together from the various reports that had indicated birth weights of cows fed fat prepartum, and ran the statistics on that to demonstrate that birth weight is not affected by feeding fat during the prepartum period. Okay, so if we take that one step further, there's a chance then that dystocia would not be a factor in the case of feeding fat during the late gestation period. And actually, there are a couple pieces of information in the literature that would actually suggest that calving difficulty is not a problem in the case of prepartum fat supplementation. Some data from Miles City, again, where they were interested in how calves that were gestated by cows fed fat and how they might respond to exposure to cold would indicate that those calves that were gestated by cows consuming fat during late gestation have greater cold tolerance. And these data are also confirmed in a more recent publication by Virginia Tech, where they basically came in and said, this is exactly what happens, and the response is more notable in the case of exposing calves to harsh conditions. But if the calves aren't exposed to harsh conditions, which probably is not true for our region, then we don't see this type of response. When we just look at another variable that is easily measured by a producer using the IRM guideline for calf vigor, comparing calf vigor for animals, for calves, neonatal calves, immediately after being born, and again, they were gestated by either cows not fed fat or supplemented with fat, would indicate that the calf vigor is not different among the two groups. Another issue that could influence survivability is the ability of those calves to respond to some type of foreign antigen. And so in that study that I mentioned before where we fed those cows at high plan of nutrition prepartum and then added the fat, we took those calves about 10 to 12 weeks of age and challenged them with a foreign antigen to see if there was something to the idea of boosting the immune status of those calves when they were gestated by cows fed fat. And the data that I have on the screen presently would certainly suggest that. You could interpret these data to suggest that the calves that came from dams fed fat had greater titer responses to the foreign antigen. There's some literature, you kind of have to read through it and glean out certain pieces of it, but there is some indication that if you boost linoleic acid content just ever so slightly, there is potential to increase the immune response of an animal. And so maybe to partly explain why we did see that increase in immune response by those calves could be explained by the fact that we did slightly increase the linoleic acid status of those calves when we measure plasma linoleic acid content. Now, it is possible to maintain that higher level of linoleic acid in those calves. In other words, continue to bolster the linoleic acid status of those calves. If you continue to feed cows fat high in linoleic acid during lactation. And so what I have represented on this current slide is a correlation between milk 18.2, which is linoleic acid, and on the y-axis is calf adipose tissue concentration of linoleic acid. And the way that we increased linoleic acid in the milk or the supply to the calf was through feeding a high linoleate safflower seed during gestation. And sure enough, it is possible to increase the calf status and continue to increase the calf status of linoleic acid content. We don't know what this means in terms of the calf's ability to respond to an immune challenge yet, but hopefully within the next year we'll have those data too. Okay, to briefly summarize then, all of the things that we've gone through today, from the earlier literature and from what Rick had presented just before me, when we feed fat during that period of time after breeding and up through the breeding season, what we see is an increase in ovarian follicular growth and development. Also, fat feeding enhances luteal activity. But the bottom line is that this does not affect postpartum interval. It does not improve reproduction. And in some cases, namely that Wyoming data that I showed you, there is potential to reduce first cervix conception rates. So in that case, you might want to reconsider feeding fat, or at least the fat that we fed in those studies, because of the possibility of decreasing first cervix conception rates. In terms of feeding fat prepartum, what we see is no effect, and I indicate there does not appear to be an effect on postpartum interval because that only represents data from one study with relatively small animal numbers. Consistent with what I had talked about as far as overall conception in the case of postpartum fat feeding, there is not an effect on first service conception rates when we feed fat prepartum. However, overall, when we look at overall pregnancy, there appears to be an effect, that is, an increase in conception when we feed the fat, and perhaps that is related to the increase in linoleic acid status of those cows fed the fat. In terms of the calf response, what we see is that we did not affect calf birth weight, so we shouldn't have any problems with dystocia. In the case of exposing those calves or those calves being exposed to harsh conditions, there's a great chance that we will influence and bolster their ability to handle that cold. In addition to that, it is possible, at least from our preliminary work, that we may be increasing the immune status of those calves. And once more, at this time, maybe I'll just suggest that that could be related to the fact that we're increasing the linoleic acid status of those calves as well. Before I am kicked off the podium here, I just want to acknowledge the people that have sponsored our work, indicated at the very top, all the people that I've had the pleasure of working with at the University of Wyoming as far as my collaborators, and then off campus and in the industry, the research associates in our laboratory as well as across the campus of the University of Wyoming, and then the graduate students in my laboratory as well as other laboratories from the collaborators. At this point, I guess I'd like to say thank you for your attention, and I've once again enjoyed the opportunity to be here today.
We're going to try to stay on time, and so we'll not take any questions right now. I do have a couple of quick reminders. Again, there are meal tickets for the beef dinner tonight at the Gearing Civic Center available at the registration area. If you want to come to that dinner, please take care of getting those tickets now during the break. It'll be your last chance. But also ask if those of you that might be leaving today, if you would take time before you leave to fill out that evaluation form. You'll find that in the back end of the symposium proceedings. And there are boxes